I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Deirdre O'Kane podcast with SJ and Eva B. Sarah Jane is still in Madrid and Eva is still in London. I am still in Dublin and welcome aboard. So I did want to ask you both this. Have you ever had, I think Eva, you spoke about having therapy before, so I know you've gone to therapy. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had therapy in the traditional sense of the word, but when Steve was ill, I thought I need something to get me through this. And my sister Gonya said to me, would you consider going to, she does a lot of chanting, meditation, that's chanting within a group. And I thought, no, a group thing is just not for me. I don't have the energy right now. Couldn't do that. But she said, would you go and talk to Emer Lush, who's a spiritual kind of like, she's not a healer, but she would sort of, you would just talk to her for a bit and she would do the chanting and the meditation. I thought, well, I was so desperate. I needed something. So I said, well, look, I'll go and see her once and see if I like it. Because it wasn't really therapy for me. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like a problem I needed to solve. It was just, I needed somebody to talk me through, help me talk through in a way what I was going through. That sounds like I did need therapy, didn't I?
A little bit.
That's therapy.
I just completely contradicted myself. I probably should have gone to a regular therapist. Anyway, I went to see Emer, who is, I don't even know, I think I asked her recently how she would describe herself, and she's like a spiritual mentor almost, and stroke healer, guiding person, whatever, that kind of thing. So I went to her for an hour and oh my God, I felt so good after it. I couldn't believe it because I was just able to sit down in this room with the person I didn't really know and say, this is what I'm going through. This is what's happening with Steve. Yada, yada. And I had real fear, you know, like that was the main thing I needed to express was my real fear about what we were going through, what he was going through. How was it going to end? And she listened. And then also she would do the mantra and I would just close my eyes. So in a way it was like a meditation. So she would just say, you close your eyes and I'll do the meditation. And I will just sort of, in a way, project light and healing into you, into Steve. And this would happen and I would sit in the chair. And by the time I left, the weight of the world was off my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I went to her once a week for the duration of all of his treatment. And it was like, it was almost like going to a garage and getting filled up with a tank of petrol. It sustained me. I could even feel the wane by the time it got to a Friday, if I was going to see her on a Monday. Like I was almost all out of the good energy by a Friday and I'd go to her on a Monday. And I'd guess she'd give me the good stuff again. It was fascinating. But I wanted to ask you two if you'd ever had therapy or something similar.
When I went, it was for straightforward. I mean, what I mean is it was more traditional psychotherapy that I went for.
I'm so curious about that because I really love it. But I've
it was interesting because I struggled with it for ages when I was going. Like anything, you go for one reason and, you know, especially with psychotherapy, you inevitably, you know, go back into like historical issues and sort of...
Yeah, I have a real fear of that. Like psychotherapy is the heavy stuff, isn't it?
Well, I don't know enough about how it compares to being going to a psychoanalyst or a psychiatrist.
I think it's heavier, Eva, because you're looking back into your more familial stuff, I think.
Is it similar to cognitive therapy?
No, it's talking therapy. It's just, okay. It's all talking. They don't, I mean, my therapist, but I have nothing to compare it to. Like she wouldn't say a huge amount. She'd sort of, that, and that's the bit that I struggle with the most because it's your hour to you could talk about whatever the hell you want to talk about, or you can sit in silence. But I struggled with that hour being my hour, I suppose. I struggled with the pressure of feeling like I had to talk and I had to have some sort of breakthrough, and which none of that is correct at all. That's purely my sort of stumbling block for the first few months of how, of feeling comfortable in a space of where you could do or say whatever you wanted. And if you wanted to sit and say nothing for an hour, you could. Or if you wanted to blether on about something completely inane, you could. Or if you wanted to dig deep, you could. And she would listen and she would sort of surmise what you talked about and say, and tell you what, how she interpreted it. You know, I think from what you're saying, this is what's going on. She'd help put it in order. She'd help give you clarity on those feelings and thoughts and questions. But really, so once I finally kind of got comfortable with the fact that this was my hour to be as to reveal whatever I wanted to reveal, then I got a lot more out of it. But it took me quite some time to just feel find my way with it.
I can understand that. I can really understand.
Yeah. But it was massively beneficial. I would, you know, recommend therapy to anybody. Mm. I think you do, like I said, you go in for one reason and you start to uncover and understand a lot more about issues that I hadn't ever really spoken about at length or hadn't thought about in such a deep way before. That really did help lots of other areas of my life that I had never intended on talking to her about. Mm. So it was really brilliant.
Yeah, amazing. Because I'd have a real fear now of psychotherapy, because and yet I really feel like I would benefit from a weekly therapy. I mean, even just describing what I did there with Emer, like, and the fact that it got me through a week, I kind of know that. I think I'm particularly drawn to cognitive behavioral therapy, because what you mentioned, SJ, because that is very much about the present. Sure. That's not looking back. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to analyze the past.
And that's fair enough. And I would never go to a psychotherapist again, because I feel like I've done that. I've pulled apart all those old issues.
And did you go for, now I'm not asking you to tell me the specific reason, but was it for a specific thing you wanted to?
It was for a specific thing, but it was a relationship thing that was not anything to do with my past. It was something that was current and that I was struggling with. But inevitably what happens is, you know, you're looking into yourself to see why you behave the way you behave. So inevitably you go back and look at your upbringing and your siblings and your parents and, you know, things that happened when you were a child and all this, because it informs who you are today. And unless you sort of, I suppose the reasoning behind it is, unless you fully understand why you are the way you are, you have to, you know, look back to see what brought you to this point, and why you then relate to people in the way that you do today, why you behave the way you do in relationships.
Feel very empowered after you did that? Because it sounds empowering to go back and analyze those things.
I don't know if I'd use the word empowering, because some of it's very, you know, upsetting, obviously, but it's also completely enlightening as well, because you go, wow, that completely explains why in a relationship I do X, Y, and Z. It's something that I never would have connected before, you know, and you can go, of course it's connected. It's because what the dynamics in your family or what, whatever it is. So it's very, it was a huge eye opener. I got a much, much greater understanding of who I am as a person, much greater understanding of that. But I think if I was to go back to therapy, it would be because of a particular issue or issues that are occurring in my daily life today that I would want to talk to somebody who would be able to give me practical advice, that I could thrash things out in the open, and it'd be a much more sort of practical session. I think I would, you know, I would see myself doing that at some point in the future.
I did that. I did it once.
What did you do?
I don't actually know what I looked up. I was about to enter a situation that I had already gone through, and was dealing with a person that was bringing a great amount of anxiety, and I was just having awful negative thoughts that this person made me feel about myself. And I knew that it was because of how this person was acting, that it was about how I was going to cope with dealing with this person in this next phase of a workplace scenario.
Okay. So like a toxic energy in your workplace that was making your life.
Absolutely.
Difficult.
Absolutely. And this is maybe 15 years ago, the one and only time I've ever done it. And it was to give me the tools that I needed, that I knew already how I was going to deal with this. And it was simply that I was going to not deal with this person anymore, which involved actually this person was, I thought was a friend, but I realized this is not a friend because this is not how my friends treat me. And this is not the sort of characteristics I look for in people that I consider my friends. And so it was kind of a breakup of a relationship that I realized was a very false friendship. And yet we were then going to be thrown into the same situation. And I needed to give myself the strength to understand that, no, it's okay to keep this person out of your life. And I went to this session and basically told them all of that. And she looked at me and she said, "Ah, you're grand. Yeah, you've got this all under control."
I just love that though, because you got the confirmation that you knew it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it worked.
That's what I needed. And it was important enough for me to be able to get through these next few months.
Did that help you then to go carry out what you were going to do?
It really helped. It really helped. And I wasn't in any way dismissive or mean. And it was great. And she, you know, the woman didn't really say much. Like, as you said, Eva, she just let me talk. And it was good. It was a good thing for me to do. And I haven't.
It's good to put that out there, because lots of people, they don't realize. I know several people who've gone for just one session over a particular problem that they needed to solve. And the therapist has gone, "Yeah, you've got this," talked it through, given them confirmation that they're on the right track, and said, "Yeah, that's fine. You don't need to come back to me."
Yeah.
You know, but this, and that's not a brilliant thing.
It was.
People think they have to go to therapy for months.
No. And also, what for me, I felt like I had the support from all of my friends, of course, and I'm my true friends, but I felt like I don't want to be talking about this with other friends. Like, I needed an objective perspective. I didn't want to be kind of, if you're talking about a situation like this, it sounds like you're kind of, "And then she did this and then she did that." But it's like, no, it's beyond that. You know, I'm an adult and I feel like I'm living in a school playground. The way I'm being treated, it was just all very infantile. And I just needed somebody who was a professional to say, "Nope, that your thought process is fine," as opposed to, of course, you're going to have the support of your friends. Of course,
like you say, it's the objectivity that your friends can't have, because you're all, you know,
they're going to support you anyway.
They know the person or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's kind of a stigma attached, isn't there, sometimes to, in Ireland, like to counselling. "Oh, she's to go to a counsellor. Oh, she's to go to therapy." It's like, it's there for a reason. It's there to give people the help that they need.
I think
need.
There's less stigma now, though.
I think, but there aren't enough people, I'd say, accessing it for themselves. But listen, I could put myself into that. I mean, I did access the help from Emer. I just was looking at her text there, because she's a mindfulness meditation teacher as well as being a well-being and wellness mentor. Who you can find at Spiritual Garden on Instagram. But I didn't, like, I still feel I could really benefit and from cognitive behavioral therapy, because it focuses on being in the present and staying positive in the present. Mm-hmm. And that, and yet I won't do it. I haven't done it for myself. Now, COVID came along and it was around that time that I was thinking, I want to do this for myself. But, you know, it's a commitment. If you're spending 60 quid for the hour or whatever it is, you have to have that 60 quid and you have to decide to spend that on yourself. Now, the truth is, you probably would spend 60 quid, you know, you might throw it away on a candle. Whatever, you know? So you have to prioritize yourself. And I guess there's been a lot of times where I just haven't been able to afford it.
But you deserve it after this as well.
Yeah.
Do it. Yeah. I think you get a lot out of it. It feels
my thing would be finding a good one, finding a good therapist. That's a big one, isn't it? I'd need a word.
Recommendation. Told you my best friend, Paul Hughes. He's an amazing therapist.
But he's in London, isn't he?
No, he's in Dublin.
Oh, stop. Yeah. A cognitive behavioral one.
No, he's not. But he would absolutely put you, he's a psychotherapist, but he would put you in touch with somebody who would do EBT.
Oh, well, EBT. I'll be on immediately. Yeah. Oh, great.
Tell me how you're doing after your week. Last week, your fabulous, glorious, glamorous, show busy.
Oh, listen.
Everyone making you a cup of tea, wiping your arse, doing whatever.
Well, let's just talk about the come downs, right? Because our highs, they're so high. They're so high. I mean, a showbiz high is really something else, you know, like it really was. The semi-final in particular. I think it's fine for me to talk about this now because the show was announced. I won't talk about any of the particular acts or anything, but I felt like we as the panel, so there were five of us on the panel, including Jedward with their one vote on my left and Boy George on my right and lovely Lyra and Aston Marigold, and none of us knew each other. So
I had to Google Aston Marigold. I had no idea who he was.
I don't know who he is.
Well, you've been away for so long, you've missed all of the things. I saw Aston on X Factor when JLS were on X Factor because I was watching that with my kids. Right. And I saw him on Strictly. So I actually knew a lot about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he was coming on. I'd seen him quite a bit. And then Lyra is a new singer. So she's just up and coming and very much on her way. She's fabulous. The point is, and I certainly knew who Boy George was, but we'd never met. And the Jedward boys I'd encountered like once in my life. And we've been looking at them. As I said to them, you know, when did you come onto the scene? They were 17 and they're 30 now. 30. And they've grown up in the public eye. You know, they're absolutely amazing. I have an awful lot of time for them. I really enjoyed them. And they were fabulous for me. They were constantly, they do this thing where they just have a shtick, you know, where they just are, it's a running commentary. I finally got a hold on what they do. So they go, here comes Dee. She's looking great. She's got the hair on. She's got the jewelry. She's got the cream jacket. She's looking good. And they'll do this constant little commentary, but very good for your ego. They're forever good, you know. Constantly making me feel good. I couldn't thank them enough for it. They're, you know, really generous. Really generous. Yeah. Oh, here comes Jay. She's got the wisdom. She's got, you know, she's got the years. So cute. But on our first 2 days, none of us knew each other. So you're just sitting beside Boy George, whom you have never met, and the boys who you don't know, and having to make sort of small talk and having to work together. So by the time we got to, by the time we were a few days in, we'd all gotten to know each other. We were starting to laugh and have some crack. And by the time we got the semi-final, it was like, oh, okay, this is working. We were all really different in our comments. And I just could feel myself getting high on this. I thought, oh, I'm loving this now. We've landed, you know? You know, because you know, like when you start anything, it's like trying to get to know the territory and everybody's in the new kid in school and everybody's trying to do a good job. But once you get to know each other, you relax, you start laughing. And that was all happening. The semi-final was nerve biting. Every time I listen back to this podcast, I listen to my, like, they're not spoonerisms, are they? Are they called spooners and Mrs. Malapropisms, spoonerisms? I hear myself constantly referring to my runners as Sam Smiths instead of Stan Smiths.
Yeah. But I know it's a spooner. It's just wrong.
And I just did one there. Nerve biting, I said.
Yeah, nail biting.
Nerve racking and nail biting.
Yeah.
Not nerve biting.
But we know what you mean.
We know what you mean.
I just like to let the listeners know that I know I'm wrong. Okay.
Let's call it a deism.
Yeah, but when I said that to you, when you said about your Sam Smith runners, I just assumed that the singer Sam Smith had a new line of clothing. I have no reason to doubt you. I didn't even Google it. Exactly. I was like, that's how out of the loop I am.
Yeah. And it's exactly, if Sam Smith had any brains, he'd bring out a line of runners called Sam
I'd buy
Smith.
Them.
And absolutely go for it. Challenge the Sam Smiths because they're doing very well.
I do. Go on.
Anyway, and then the semi-final, the standard was really, really high and we had to eliminate people and vote for people and it was unbelievably hard. And I have a genuine love for talent. So I think I'm the best person you could ask to be a judge of talent because I love talent. I admire it like I'm off the charts in my admiration for people who can sing, who can dance, who, you know, I love them. Like,
oh, I bet you were such a nice judge. Oh,
yeah, I bet you were really supportive.
So kind and yeah.
I think I was, but I had to also say no to people. So yes. Here's the dilemma. So you're having to be constructive and say, look, I'm only saying no to you for this reason. And maybe you could go through and better it next week. You know, there's a lot of that. But I really just enjoyed it so much. And honestly, lads, since the lashes came off, I'm not the same girl. There's no doubt about it. False lashes, they change your face. And I when they came off, I was like, oh, I'm half the woman I was yesterday. Literally. Literally, the tan was gone. The lashes were gone. The styling was gone. The hair was gone back to its normal phrase that I'm trying to control.
You're a Cinderella.
And that's only the visual come down. I no longer have the company. I don't have Jedward to say, here comes Dee, she looked good.
I mean, we can do that for you if you want.
We can do it.
There she is, sitting there with her headphones.
Her hair's coming down over her glasses, looking a bit sassy, got the spray tan on, looking super sassy and sexy.
That's it, you've got it. That's the Jedwards. Oh, they're so but yeah, oh, listen, sure, you're my heroes. The podcast of a Tuesday is
we're your Jedwards.
You're my Jedwards, you are. So yeah, the come down, lads. It's not easy.
Oh, yeah.
It's an awful easy land. I remember my biggest we call it showbiz come down. I'm sure you've both had them, but when we were shooting in Vietnam, we were shooting Noble. We'd been there for 3 months. And when we got back, or the turnaround of the filming, we were filming in Vietnam, but then they were filming the younger Christina Noble, who was Sarah Green, in Liverpool. So the suitcases, Steve's cases were packed, one for Vietnam with, you know, everything to go with the hot climate, and one for Liverpool where it would be snowing and absolutely freezing. But I wasn't going to Liverpool because I was now done with them. They were moving on to the younger model, the younger Christina. And so I was dropped like a hot potato. We arrived at the flat. He picked up his winter suitcase, dropped his Vietnam one, picked up winter and went, see ya. And you know, like when you're making a film, you don't see other people. You have so much in your mind, so much to think of. So he was just gone out the door, and the film and the crew and everything that had been my life for 3 months went to Liverpool without me. And I went to do the school run the following morning. And I was like, oh, Jesus, right. Okay.
So hard.
Well, that's over. That's over. And it was like, oh,
crash landing.
School lunches. Oh, Jesus, I haven't made a school lunch. 3 months, didn't know what to do. I was an awful land. Oh, it took me a week. It took me a week. And I couldn't even get my husband on the phone. Like, I was trying to ring him for a conversation. How's it going?
Yeah.
Just too busy. It's like, it's going fine. It's going fine. I have to go. Oh, God. Okay.
Oh, that's a tough one.
It's such an adjustment, isn't it? When you come back from a shoot and you're just completely ensconced, wrapped up in that shoot. If you're on location where everything in your normal life just gets, you know, left behind because it has to then come back and slot back in like it never happened. It's always shock to the system.
And you know, just to explain to people who are listening about how films work, the reason there's people carrying an umbrella over your head, you know, is not like because you're the diva star. It's because your hair cannot get frizzy. It cannot change. There's
just
continuity.
Spent 2 hours in the makeup chair.
Precisely. And you know, we need you to be not hungry. Like, you have to deliver the goods. So there's a reason behind everything. And you know, time is all about save time. Is money, right? So saving time constantly. So therefore, when it's over,
you have to carry your own umbrella.
I don't even carry umbrellas, so I just live with the frizz. It's a drop. Like, it's literally a drop from a height.
Yeah, because the adrenaline is so high, and then suddenly there is a loss.
Thank you. That's it.
And then you get back to your own life and you have to make...
Nobody cares.
Nobody gives a shit.
Well, you're the carer, aren't you? Is it similar? Because I always think when you're doing live shows, I've done very little theatre in my life, so I don't have anything really to draw from that. But when you're doing like stand-up, SJ, you've done lots of theatre as well. Is that high and Rush even more so because it's a live audience? Is that live feedback from people? That must surpass what it feels like to come off a filming job.
Yeah, the come down, the come down from the stand up is intense. It's but I've got it down. It's 2 hours. Like I've actually sort of timed, you know, the adrenaline in my body, and I know it's gone in about 2 to 3 wow. hours. Yeah, and I usually have a couple of drinks to kind of come down, unless I have to get straight into the car, which a lot of the time when I'm on the road, there's no drink, because if I'm within a 2 hour drive, if I'm on the road, I get in the car and I drive home. And if I'm not, then I have a few drinks. So, but usually by the end of my drive, I'm down. You know what I mean? Right. So I'm getting in the car, absolutely wired by the time I get to the door. Now, obviously there's the bit of your folks and the driving and everything else, but it's still in my body. Like I'm still flying. Yeah. And if a support act is with me, like we're talking nine to the dozen, for an hour and a half. And then you start to suddenly slow, come down.
Yeah, sure.
But theatre highs for me, like usually I used to find, I'm sure SJ might be different, but for me after 6 weeks.
Oh no. Yeah, you're done. I mean, there's obviously the very natural high of opening night or first preview, you know, where you're getting your first reaction from a live audience, and that's very exhilarating. And or if the show is good, or rather deflating if you go, get the laugh there. But the highs of opening week are great. And then, Dee, as you said, if it depends on the show, though. I have had some shows where I just didn't want them to end. Like, this is one of the best things I've done, and I just love the reaction you're getting every night, and the company that you're in, and certain plays are very special, and you know, because you're an actor, that it's going to end, and that's always difficult. One of the things I used to hate when I was acting was you'd be in a play and then you'd meet somebody who's not in the business, and you've only just started rehearsing, or you've only just opened, and somebody says, "What's next for you?" And that
they don't understand. They don't understand the business.
Kill me! I'm like, what's next for me? I don't know. I'm doing this, and this is it. Because all plays end, and I mean, a lot of the time, you're ready for them to end. They have a natural life, but there are some then where those last nights, the last performance, and you know you've gotten so much out of it, and you know that these people, they've meant so much to you, and it's just been a very joyful experience. Those ones are harder to say goodbye to and to let go of, but the highs are usually on those first few nights when you've got the audience in. And
well, your adrenaline is off the scale on previews, like the nerves.
Oh, God.
Jesus, Mary. How did we do it? I don't do theatre very often anymore. I sort of do it every few years.
Sure.
And every time I find myself doing those previews, I think.
I know.
Jesus. I feel like that doing stand-up too. I think, why?
It's God, I just always think stand-up is just another league. Yes, completely. Like, go out there on your own and make all those people laugh.
I think it's the bravest form.
It's the bravest, and it's the biggest challenge of all.
Yeah,
it's a huge challenge for sure. But once you've got a good show on your hands, then it's like theatre. You know, you've got a show in your pocket and you go on and you do it. That's easy. It's the creating a new show and going out with the new stuff. That's a kind of double-edged sword, because when it works, it's a massive high. And when it doesn't, you're like, having to apologize on the spot and get yourself out of it.
Oh, God.
It's a head wreck.
Incredible.
But I was going to say something else about the theater ending. What was it? I can't remember now. It's gone. Oh, I'm sure it was good. I think that's what I was going to say. Theatre is bloody hard work.
It is hard work. It is.
And I remember when they didn't have matinees in Ireland, I remember them coming in. I remember that it was like 6 nights a week and it was lovely. Yeah. And then they brought in the Saturday matinee and I was like, all right. Then they brought in the Wednesday matinee. And I think that's when it all changed.
Matinee in Ireland, do they do that in Ireland?
Yes, Wednesdays and Saturdays now.
I just think it's grossly unfair on the actor. It's such a hard graft for not much money. I just think. Yeah.
Well, if you're performing the likes of Hamlet or anything that's,
physically our show, and then you did again that evening.
Physically and mentally demanding. It's bloody hard work, and it's not well paid, as we all know. Yeah,
it's funny, like, because some people have said, will you go back on stage when you're in Dublin? And it's not that I wouldn't think about it, of course I would, but it would have to be a very particular job in a very particular theatre, no tour, that all of those boxes would have to tick for me, so that it would be a very happy experience, because I've done all of the other shows and the tours and the big
and touring, like, with small children, it's really
I'm hard. Not doing it. And it's one thing if you knew that it paid an awful lot of money,
that's it,
and then you go, okay, well, you weigh up the pros, and okay, well, the pros are, but it doesn't offer that. So at this stage, it would have to be something that was in Dublin and that worked in with the life, and which included Lewis and Delhi, you know. That,
well, there's lots of people who are either single and they don't have kids, so that's not an element for them. They can go on the road, they're free to go on the road, and that's really enjoyable. But it just all changes when you've got small kids.
It does.
It just changes completely.
Absolutely. You have to make,
and then I see an awful lot of actors going back to it when they've got their kids.
Their kids are getting older.
True. Yeah, and they're a bit older. And they go back and they go, oh, you know what? That might be fun just to do that again.
Yeah.
And as you say, the right play in the right company. And isn't it hilarious? Because we used to desire the lead so much when we were younger. And now I'm like, a little cameo would be.
I'm the same, and I am the exact same. I'm like, oh yeah, just give me a
one little,
a
no pressure, just
one
small
part that had a scene stealing moment. That's all I need, you know, so I'm not forgotten. Come on, be brilliant and go back to the bar. Yeah.
Our lovely dear friend Justine Mitchell, fabulous, wonderful, extraordinary human, an actress.
Phenomenal actress.
Phenomenal. Oh my God.
World class. Amazing all-rounder.
Amazing all-rounder of everything. But she said to me one day, you go in, first day of rehearsal, and everyone is all nervous. The person who goes up to the, you know, make themselves a cup of tea and just trying to be like, hello, yeah, and trying to make a joke. And you come out with something like, yeah, like totally. I mean, yeah, it's like anal sex. You know, we've all had anal sex, right?
Silence.
It's just silence. But I just love just imagining her saying it, imagining any of us saying it, just trying to break the ice with this.
I'm going
to
be the funny one.
Joke that not everyone's going to get or appreciate.
I took a risk. That's it, Ross.
I took a risk.
That's a really brilliant way of framing that. I took a risk. It's like it puts it all, it gives you the glory, you know, without the humiliation. Yeah. I took a risk. I put myself out there.
Ross does it a lot. I can encourage you. At a dinner party, kind of go, oh God, he's taking a risk. And he'll look at me with that face. I took a risk.
Yeah, as opposed to, I really misjudged that.
Yeah, exactly.
He's put the positive spin on it and gone, I took a risk. Aren't you proud of me?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Are ye any good at complaining? Now, this could cover a whole range of what type of complaining and who to, but would you consider yourselves good at it, bad at it? Discuss.
It depends.
Discuss.
And blankly.
you go first, SJ, because I'm always talking. sound sick of myself.
I guess it depends on who you're talking to and how you navigate your complaint and your relationship to that person. Because everyone takes, I mean, I guess because you're criticizing something that someone is doing. So there's a way around doing it. Like if you're complaining to an airline company, there have been moments where, you know, the anger levels are high and that's not a good way to complain. And I've learned over the years that just being nice actually is a very good way of delivering a complaint. But it's also understanding your audience and knowing how you are in any given moment when you approach said person with said complaint. And also, how serious is the complaint? And is it worth complaining with this complaint at any given time? Yes. And choosing your battles and choosing your moments. So I would say, yes, I'm probably a better complainer than I was.
Well, what about, let me ask you this then. Are you good in a situation when you should complain? You're within your rights to complain, but you're too nice to complain. So you pretend that everything's actually fine, like a bad haircut or a meal that's not up to scratch. You still go, yeah, no, it's lovely. Yeah, no. And in your head, you're kind of going, no, fucking isn't. That was fucking shit. And you're paying for it, you tool.
Yeah.
But how it's coming out of your mouth is, okay, no, that's lovely. Yeah, no, I just wasn't very full. Thanks, Emil. Ah, yeah, thanks. Thank you. Yeah. I'll pay everything. Of course, I'll pay the full bill.
I definitely think we've all been guilty of that with the hairdressing situation. That's the worst because they've done their best and you hate it. And you're just, and your lip has started to tremble because you're going to cry. So you just go, it's great, thanks, because you just want to get out of there. You just want to get out of there so fast. And there's no point in saying, this isn't what I imagined.
That's when it's the hardest. When if somebody is being nice to you, they're doing their best. There's no animosity. It hasn't got, you know, you haven't been treated unfairly, but you are within your rights to say you don't like something. That's when I really struggle to say it. The fear of offending the other person.
Different in a work. Say you're very nice, Eva. I could see this being
very nice, like in a hairdresser's or a restaurant or the one scenario. I don't know. Tell me if I've told this story again. I might have forgotten. But one where I was in actual pain and couldn't let them know because I was being so fucking polite was I was getting myself and Ross were gifted a treatment, you know, like a massage treatment in this beautiful place where he was working. And we got instead of getting paid, we were put up in this beautiful place and they gifted us like a spa morning, gorgeous place. And it was very sunny where we were because it was abroad. And I had got burnt the day before. I had really sunburnt my legs quite badly. And we went for our spa treatment the next morning, first thing the next morning. And the ritual to kick off the treatment was
a scrub.
The foot scrub with salts, with smelling salts.
Dear God.
Quite hot water. So my feet went in, and the water alone was, you know, if you got burnt skin, hot water feels scalding hot water.
Oh, yeah.
So the feet went in. I was like, oh. And she said, oh, well, you want some, should I put some? And I was like, no, I'm sure. I'll just get used to it now in a second.
Eva!
And then she started scrub the burnt skin with coarse salt. And it was literally, I may as well have had like no skin and just wounds on my legs. That's the level of pain. And she was rolling the leg up and down. And I sat everything was so perfect. The setup with the view, Ross is beside me. They'd like just bent over backwards to make this the best treatment ever. And we weren't paying for it. So I sat there with like silent water, tears running down my face.
Oh, Eva, that's too nice.
My red raw legs. It was agony, and I endured it. Inside, I was screaming.
Oh,
geez.
Oh, love, that is too
that's
much.
Wrong, isn't it?
So wrong. Ow.
Yeah. It's not even really complaining. Sure, it's not. It's just I'm actually suffering. Could you help?
Can I ask you? Was that a long time ago? Would you have been a good bit younger?
It would have been about 9 years ago.
Yeah, it's a good long while, because we definitely get better at complaining with age.
We do.
Hence all those shows like Grumpy Old Women, Grumpy Old Men. You know, we all start complain more.
Yeah.
We get a bit more tired.
And don't get me wrong. If I feel like, if somebody has been rude to me, or if somebody hasn't, you know, done their job properly, or has been, you know, if it's, I have no qualms about voicing how I feel. So if it's the right environment, if a working environment, if stuff needs to get done, or if somebody has been blatantly out of line, I'll be the first to go, hang on, excuse me, and I'll voice. But if somebody's been nice to me, not only nice to me, they're treating
their best,
you know, and then they're doing their best, then it's just like, oh Jesus, I don't know.
Yeah. But would you think you'd let that happen now? Do you think if that you were in that situation now, you'd still endure it?
I would with hair. I did it not so long ago with hair.
Oh, did you?
I didn't like the colour of it. And I was just like, okay, yeah, no, I think it'd be grand. Just after a wash, it'll probably just, you know, it'll settle.
I do it with the hair as well. Yeah. I have to tell you, like, when it comes to small complaining, like, I'm the fucking queen of it. And I'm the queen of it. And I have become that older person. So let's say, well, okay, I'll give you an example. Now, I like to think I'm always either nice or humorous about it, and at least fair. I do try not to be ever obnoxious, but let's say, for example, a supermarket where there is suddenly a queue of 10 and there are 3 empty tills. I'll be the one in the line who'll start huffing and puffing, going, this is ridiculous, isn't it? That's her talking to everyone else in the line. Like, I'll be the vocal one. So they're just standing quietly putting up with it, but I can't. I'm like, I'm 6 back, so I can't deal with the inefficiency. That's what it is. I'm thinking, I know there's another member of staff who's back there around in the storage room who needs to be told there are now 10 people in the queue. Get on the effing till.
So
I'm the one who, I put the head out. I'm starting to wave at the, I'm waving at the girl at the till. Is there anyone else? The queue's very long. Have you got another member of staff here? Yeah. And I'm talking to the woman behind me. Isn't this a bit ridiculous now? What do you think? I don't think this should be... But it's always me. It's always me.
And I would be the same in that kind of scenario. Ineptitude will get my back up, and I have no time for it. And I'll get very impatient with that. That I think is, that's fine though. And there should be more people on the tills.
I know, but why is it always me? I'm the spokesperson on behalf of the punters always.
People generally don't like to do things in public like that. Sure, they don't.
And they don't want confrontation either. There's a lot of that.
That's it. And I make a show of myself for a living, so it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? I'm just like out there anyway. I had like a classic example. I was in Dunn's one day, and the queue, and in fairness, the queue got long very quickly. Do you know what I mean? This can happen. So there's like 20 in a line, and there's one girl on the till, and I could see this young one rearranging shelves, and I'm thinking, now you don't need to be rearranging, you need to be on the till. So I'm like, I want to call the manager, like I want to say to somebody, you're not running the shop. You're not running the shop. So I eventually go up to the young one who's stacking, and I go, this queue is very long and I don't have an awful lot of time, do you think you could get a second person on the till? And she looked at me now, a little bit of contempt in her eyes, but she went, yeah, I can do that. And she walked very slowly to the table. But she did it. And the next time, the whole line was looking at me going, thank you.
But well done.
The look she gave me, the daggers before.
Oh, you don't want to be told what to do. Oh, no, no, no.
By you.
No, no. Now, listen, I, speaking of hair, so in Tralee, once I, this was when the hair was long-ish and we were mid-countries and I needed a trim. I needed a very basic trim. But you see, you can't just trim my hair. It's not that kind of hair. It needs...
Your hair is wild. Attention. It has a life of its own.
It has a life of its own. And so it needs a very good hairdresser who really understands each of the curls and anything. But anyway, I decided, I'll just go down to this hairdresser's. I literally picked one and I can't even remember the name, which is probably a good thing because I wouldn't name it anyway. And I went in and I think I was the youngest there by around 40 years, right? No bullshit. And so the experience itself for me was... exactly what the doctor ordered. Listening to the chitter chatter of the women in this particular hairdresser's was worth its weight in gold. And then my turn came and she sat down and it was going to be very cheap, €20. I was like, Jesus Christ, €20.
Perfect. That's my kind of price.
You can't beat that. And I said to her, just a little trim, just trim the ends. And oh my God. Now, when I say that the trim happened and I looked at the hair at the end and she did the little bit of blow dry and I looked like the 80-year-old woman sitting beside me.
Oh my God.
Was horrendous. But I mean, what did I expect for €20 in this hairdresser's? It was my own fault. But,
she just treated your hair like the blue rinse.
She did not listen to me. She did exactly what she's good at.
She had one technique, and she
did it on me. And I got out of the hairdresser's, and my mother was picking me up, and she took one look at me, and I went, Just go.
Move. Because the tears are coming.
There were no tears. Laughter. At this stage of my life, I don't cry over haircuts. It's like, oh my God.
No, it's okay. I thought you were much younger. Go on.
Oh, there was nothing but funny about this haircut. It was hilarious. It was so bad. We were roaring laughing. And I said, okay, this is a crisis. She was like, I'll call my guy. She got on and we had an emergency haircut, went down to the emergency haircut guy. It was worse.
Oh my God.
He took what she had done and I don't know how he did it, but it was worse. Like multiple, it was so bad. And like at this stage, I'm like, okay, this is really, really bad. So there was just lots of hats being worn. And then I run into him in Dunn's. And he even knew, he could tell when he saw me, he just went, hi. There was just an understanding that
he had butchered you.
He had butchered the hair. But anyway, where was I going to after that haircut? Was Madrid. This was our first week and it was the very first thing I did 2 days into the trip, went to Madrid and had a fabulous haircut done. They cut it off and it was all fixed, but I had to cut most of it off. But that was, I didn't complain. There was no point in complaining. You know, there was just...
No, there isn't really. And that's the thing with the hair. It's done. They can't undo it. They can't stick your hair back on for you. You know, it's done. You're just like, get me. You just want to get out. You're just like, it's too late. Complaining will make no difference. Get me out of here. Oh God, lads, bad haircuts. There's nothing worse. And you know what? Because now, like, I feel like I'm at the stage in my life where I finally got control of my hair. Mainly because of the karatés, whatever it's called, in the that's the brand. But they got some straightening component in it. Because I also have very keratin. Thanks for the help. Yet again, the keratin in the shampoo and the conditioner has made a massive difference to my hair. And the big Babyliss blow dryer, anyone who doesn't have a Babyliss, you know, brush that turns around with the heat, hair dryer, they've changed my life. That's changed my life. The mixture of keratin and that brush, I can finally like manage my hair. It'll never be amazing, but I can get out the door. Yeah. But every single picture of my life before 40, I look pretty shit. In every single photograph, the hair is bad. It's bad.
Really?
Yeah. I've only had decent hair for 10 years since the keratin and the Babyliss thing existed. Yeah.
I never thought that either.
You wouldn't have noticed, but you probably didn't see an awful lot of me before the last 10 years either.
Yeah, but we'd see you on the telly and see.
That's like, different. Then someone's doing it. Sure. So if it was being styled, but I'm talking about the everyday.
It's your day to day.
Well, that's why I chopped all mine off yesterday. I just thought, I'm actually deluding myself every day going, this is going to work. And the temperature here makes it really dry. And having had really good hair for so long and suddenly have shitty hair and dry hair, I was like, just cut it off. I'm not a blow dryer. I'm not going to do that in the morning. It's so much work and it's just not me. So it was a bit like a moment of reckoning yesterday when I went, just cut it off.
The good news is you can wear very short hair. Really, it is gorgeous on you. You know, you've got that little Tinkerbell, you know, the gorgeous, the pixie look, and it's gorgeous on you. Yeah. If I was in your shoes. Are you joking me? My face is enormous. I've got a moon-shaped face. I always remember making that joke when I was cast as Mrs. Moon in Moonboy. I said, I have manifested this. The moon face, Mrs. Moon, was what I was born to be. If I had a short haircut look, it would be a disaster. Disaster. Horrendous.
Anyway. Eve, aren't you getting yours dyed or something before the show?
No, they've decided not to go. I suggested red. They decided no. I really fancied a change, I think. And then yeah. I wanted to go shorter, not short, yeah. but like sort of above my shoulder. And they've said no to that. So I have to keep it so basically. I'm just going to look like this, which is a fit. Wow. I'm bored with this.
But they... Yeah, big stinky ride.
Yeah, no, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. So you're going
to
remain.
I'm getting a trim, and I am getting the color does need to be done, but it's
But you're going
to
you'll remain blonde.
I'll remain blonde
for the telly.
I will.
And the first read through is on Monday.
My first read through is on Monday.
Oh, how exciting! Yeah. That's one of the best days, isn't it? To read the
and a live read through. We're going meeting around a table. That's what I'm really looking forward to.
Amazing! Can't believe it. So exciting. Oh my God! You must be all dying to hang out.
Yeah,
and the excitement of your first read through.
Oh my God! Amazing. God, I can't wait to hear about it.
Having to do the rehearsal or the other stuff, that's what kills me. I just want to stay at the table with the table read, chatting with the coffee and the soap.
Yeah.
A nice plate of biscuits.
I don't actually do any biscuits.
Yes. Biscuits or croissants and lovely coffee. Don't go and talk about anal sex to anybody, okay? Thank you for listening to this week's episode, which is called I Took a Risk. You took a risk by tuning in to listen to us, and we are most grateful. Now, listen, if you liked it, would you ever give us a like and follow us? And if you're on Apple, subscribe. Who knows what it is you do? We think you follow us on Spotify. That's it, yeah. Anyway, we need you. It all helps, apparently. Cheerio.
This podcast is powered by the Acast Creator Network.